Good morning. Happy Saturday morning to you. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Kuchenberger. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
It's not just regular Happy Saturday. It's in Mexico, we call it Happy Semana Santa Saturday. That means Semana Santa is Holy Week. It is like we're cruising up to the this is the biggest holiday, are you kidding me, in the planet here. Easter in the Latin American countries is bigger than Christmas. I mean, this is...
Really?
Oh, yeah, this is the crucified Christ. Are you kidding? It's December.
Right, well, I was just about to say Happy Easter, thinking, hey, Happy Easter, and you're like, man, this is crazy Latin America Easter.
Every school in the whole country has off this week. Every restaurant is full of people having family time. People are traveling somewhere. It is... Semana Santa is like... I mean, it's like the Powerball of all holidays for us. It's it. We're
wow.
in the middle of it. I know. Very exciting.
Well, happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter.
What is your family doing?
We're going to head out to our site in Mazatlan later this week. We have a ministry site where you, too, listener, can come with your family and serve the orphan there.
Mazatlan, Mexico, yes?
Mazatlan, Mexico. So that's where we're going to go. We're going to spend a few days there with our staff team there and visit some of the orphanages. And I'm excited about it. It's good.
That's awesome. You know, you bring up a point, and again, we weren't going to necessarily bring this up, or it wasn't part of the talking points or the sheet or whatever, but some of our listeners, you know, we have lots of new listeners all the time. They may not even know the ministry site, Mazatlan thing. What are you talking about?
My husband and I are the executive directors of an organization called Back to Back Ministries. It's an international orphan care ministry, and we have sites in Jos, Nigeria, and Hyderabad, India, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and several sites here in Mexico, one where I'm calling from today in Monterey, and then another where I'll visit later this week, Mazatlan, and a third one in Cancun. So certainly if you are interested in going on a mission trip, either as a family or individually, if you got on our website, we'd be happy to help you understand mm-hmm. how to do that.
Or if your church wants to get together and do something or 100%. Any of those kind of things.
Men's you know, I'm teams, youth teams.
I have been reminded, you know, we've been doing this a little bit over a year, the radio show, and I've been reminded in the last few weeks especially that we just are getting a ton of new listeners, and so sometimes we have these conversations like everybody who's out there listening knows who we are. Actually, we have this conversation like we're the only two people in the room, but so we got to remind ourselves that there's some new listeners out there, and if you're one of them, welcome. We're glad you're here, and believe it or not, you've stumbled onto the show the last time it'll be in this time slot.
I know, starting next week, very exciting.
Awesome.
Prime time Saturday morning, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock on the West Coast. I'm excited for our new time slot. I think we're going to have the chance to get people more live. Of course, we've had lots and lots of downloads on iTunes and off the website, but this will be a chance for more people to hear us live because they're just simply awake.
Absolutely. They are awake. So we have been getting a lot of email, a lot of phone calls, a lot of all kinds of stuff that says, hey, if you could get a better time, that would be awesome. Somewhere in the 10 to 11 time frame would be awesome. And so, hello and behold, we got some people working on our behalf, and we have a 10 o'clock Eastern time slot starting next week, and that's 7 on the West Coast. So we're going to invite a whole new ton of West Coast listeners. So I'm really excited about that. And relaunching the show under a kind of a new name, Real Life with Beth and Rob, and having a web presence, reallifewithbethandrob.com, where we can continue the conversation even after our hour is done. So a lot of cool new stuff happening.
It is. I mean, nothing but exciting here at Real Life. I mean, I think one of the things I like the best about some of our changes in the relaunch is this tagline, this idea that we want to start conversations that inspire your day. And I know that you and I have talked many times that we find ourselves talking about who've been on the radio with us in our own conversations with other people
right.
and with each other. And I like that idea that we're giving people some things of substance to chat about as they move about their day. The media is full of all kinds of things that we can listen to and process and regurgitate. But I want to be a show that is thinking and that challenges people to think about things in a new way.
People would laugh if they knew, you know, once the show is over, even if you're in Monterey, I go down, get in the car, start to drive home, and invariably one of us will call the other to continue the conversation. What did you think about that? What about this? I don't know about that. So we're hoping that the same thing might happen in your car or your van or your kitchen or wherever you happen to be listening to the show, that the show will go off and the people around you, you'll say, hey, What do you think about that? So today is one of those shows. I think it's going to be an incredibly interesting show. Manny Mill is going to join us. That is probably not a household name, but he's got a new book out called Radical Redemption. It's the real story of Manny Mill. And this guy, he has got a compelling, unbelievable story about how he came from Cuba to the United States. And
Via Venezuela,
and kind of a foul of the law, how he had a conversion experience, and, you know, what he's doing now. It just really is an amazing story. So I'm looking forward to talking to Manny today.
Yeah, I think we have so much to learn from each other's testimonies. I mean, I think the way that which God moves through each other's lives, they teach us, every time we hear someone's story, a new facet of God's character. So I'm looking forward to learning more about the Lord as I learn about the way in which he's worked through Manny's life. I think it'll be good.
Absolutely. So you were telling me before the show started, and I thought I'd share this with our listeners, because sometimes I think they get the false impression that everything in the Guckenberger household just, like, goes off without a hitch. You guys are so organized, so that everything you do is just, and that's...
And you're about to debunk that here.
I'm about to do my part to debunk that a little bit. So I understand that Todd, your husband, has decided to teach the kids how to drive just a little bit earlier than you are comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's been a part of a bigger conversation. Like, you know, what
aren't they all?
What's too young to have a cell phone? What's too young to have Facebook? And what's too, like, I'm always feeling like people are doing stuff too young. People are having boyfriends too young. And so, and he and I are on the same page most of the time about the idea that let's maintain their innocence as long as possible. Let's allow them a childhood. And living on the mission field, we feel a little bit like we have the advantage of controlling a lot of the factors. We don't have television here, you know, all those things. However, we have two 14-year-olds. They're what people would call artificial twins. One's adopted and one's biological, but they're about a month and a half apart. And he just got the bright idea to teach them how to drive in a third-world country. So they are doing it. They are driving around our neighborhood, which just doesn't have lines between the roads and has no observable speed limit and, you know, a challenging insurance system. I'm like, what in the world are you thinking? And he's getting a kick out of it. They love to come home and tell me the scariest version of the story that happened on their driving lesson and the differences between teaching a boy to drive and teaching a girl to drive. And I mean, it makes my skin crawl, but it's happening here in the Guckenberger house for sure.
The thing that I like about the story, having known you guys so long, is that it's one of those stories that Todd actually sort of won the discussion in the end. That doesn't happen often.
Because if I'd had a vote, I would have exercised it extraordinarily. Well, I mean, I am known not just in my own family, but to anybody who knows me, as a very fast driver. And I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, very fast driver. That would be sort of an understatement.
Like, easily pulled over in the triple digits in my adult life. And
right. That's in Mexico, by the way.
I thought I had, like, a whole another year to begin to demonstrate more responsible driving before they were paying attention. But no, they are extraordinarily aware of how fast I'm driving, and I wasn't counting on that happening quite yet.
That's a good thing.
I don't know.
It's all now you'll notice all the little things you might not do, but other parents who are listening to the show might do, things like talk on the phone while you're driving, text while you're driving, you know, read a book while you're driving, put your makeup on while you're driving, all the things we do while we're driving. Now, once your kids start to drive and they get their temps in the United States and all that stuff, they point out everything. Dad, you're not supposed to talk on the phone and drive. Dad, you are staring at the radio station. Dad, you are, I mean, it's incessant. It's just crazy. Anyway, great show today. I'm looking forward to Manny Mill being on the show. His new book, Radical Redemption, just this compelling, great story about how his life was just sort of yanked by God in the midst of really some crazy stuff. He's going to be on the show right after the break, and I am really looking forward to hearing what he has to say.
Yeah, I am too. Again, I just, I love the idea that he works all over the world, in every life, in every circumstance, and there's nothing that can't be redeemed. So I'm looking forward
to
hearing
right.
That truth lived out.
Well, join us after the break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob, that's Beth, and we'll be back in just a minute.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there, looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
With Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning wherever you happen to be right now. I do want to remind everybody that next week we move to a new time, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. We are so excited about that new time. People just bugging us, say, hey, we want a better time slot, and we're glad. So we've had some people work that out for us. So we're moving to 10 o'clock, same channel, 131, XM Series 131. And we will be on at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific next week, and I'm very excited. Beth, you know, the one of the best things I love about this show, guess what it is, other than you?
I don't even want to guess on the air. What is
the favorite thing about the show is that we get to talk to people that I would never in a million years get to talk to, but that I get to read their books or whatever, and so week after week I'm like, man, these are good. Where do we get these people? I'm just a regular guy, and these folks are, you know, these are compelling, interesting, you know, people that I would love to talk to, and I get the chance to do it on the radio, so it's pretty awesome. And our guest today is absolutely no different. Reverend Manny Mill has a compelling, interesting, crazy story that he has chronicled in a new book, Radical Redemption, The Real Story of Manny Mill, and I'm excited that that he's on the show with us this morning. So, Manny, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. I was just listening to you that you get to talk to these people, but I'm not just anybody. I mean, I'm just a sinner like you, saved by the amazing, irresistible grace of God, and I'm on my way to hell, and I always compare myself to the Apostle Paul, that he didn't know me when he said that he was the chief of sinners.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I told our listeners during the first segment that your story actually starts in Cuba, under the communist regime of Fidel Castro. Yeah. Tell our listeners a little bit how did you and your family get out of Cuba?
Well, just a quick little bit of an overview for people that know
Please.
About Cuba and are very intrigued about it, but. Cuba, you know, is a beautiful island that before 1959, many people from this great country went there on weekends just to go and visit, just for vacations. Of course, that has not happened since 1959 when Castro took over. So it is very, very difficult to leave Cuba. I mean, you just kind of say, well, I don't like them. I don't like the system, so I'm just going to take off and leave, you know. That doesn't happen that way. So it was difficult. My father had to go to prison for it. My father had to lose everything that he has earned for years and years, and my mother too. He was a butcher. My mom was a beautician. They just were hard-working people, and one day Castro came and said, you know what, from this day on, you're going to be working for me for a tenth of what you were making, and we own this thing now, and if you don't like it, too bad, you know, everything now belongs to the government. So I was there until age 14. I said that because if you are 15 or older, between 15 and 27, you cannot leave Cuba. Those years are for Castro. He wants you to serve in the Cuban military. So I just left by the grace of God without knowing Jesus then at age 14 and 2 months, and we went to Spain first.
Gotcha. And before we get sort of into the heart of the book, you went back to Cuba in 2010, 40 years after you left. What drew you back to Cuba, and what was that like?
Well, you know, Cuba is part of me. That's where I was born. That's my culture. That's my heritage. That's my people, in a sense. So I always wanted to go back, and many people asked me to go with them, but I never felt, you know, really the calling that was the right ministry to go with, you know. But finally, a ministry came along, another Cuban, his name is George Acosta, and he has a ministry that has gone to Cuba a few times. So he asked me to come, and I said yes. So when I say yes, the Bible says, let your yes be yes and your no be no, otherwise you will be condemned. So I said yes, but I didn't know how difficult it was going to be. It took 9 months of paperwork, visas, permission from the government, because I was not just going to go to go to Cuba. I was going to go to preach the gospel. That means I had to get a permit from the Cuban government for me as a former Cuban who left Cuba to come back with this message of hope of Jesus Christ. So, you know, it was crazy. But God opened the door. I was denied twice. But then I got there, and they even detained me when I got to the airport, you know. So that was pretty, you know, pretty kind of weird, you know. But God used me there for 8 days, and the gospel was proclaimed clearly in Spanish, and the people received me well, and God opened some new doors for me there, even to come back someday soon. So that was a great experience.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Okay, take us back to your story. You're a 14-year-old, and you and your family decide that it's time to leave Cuba in order to be protected from that season that was coming up for you. Where were you led to from there?
Well, it took us a few years to get to that point, but finally we left when I was 14 and 2 months. My parents, my sister, and my uncle, we left together as Cuban refugees. We left Cuba with nothing. I mean, when I say nothing, Beth, I mean nothing, you know. And we got to Spain, and we didn't have a job. We didn't have anything, so my father had to depend on people that we knew in the States that were going to send us money. I mean, we all got a job. So I didn't go to school from age 14 to 16 because I had to get 2 jobs and help my parents eat, you know. So I know what it means to have something, and then I know what it means to have nothing, you see. So we were there for 2 years, and finally my sister and I were able to come to this great country on August the 2nd, 1972.
And when you got to the United States, how did you feel like you were received?
You know what? I am the most grateful person to this country. Cubans tend to be that way, you know, because we know where we came from. Mm-hmm. And me being in Cuba just 2 years ago and saw the poverty of the people. There is nothing in the store. People cannot even eat, you know. I mean, this was heaven for us, you know. So we are very grateful, and the people here were very, you know, they were welcoming to us. So I went right to school. I went to high school. I was a pretty good baseball guy, so I played baseball, and I got a job for myself. So I could help my father pay all those debts that we had. So, I mean, we just plugged in real, real well. I didn't know any English. I still don't, you know. I'm just, you know, messing with you. And so I took ESL, you know, and I went to high school, and then then things went very well until I realized that I was a sinner, you know.
Right. So you mentioned that it's similar to Saul in Acts 9. You've talked about, you know, this idea that you're now a believer, but your book talks about you were headed in one direction and then almost yanked in another direction. Where were you heading, and how did God yank you out of that?
I mean, I believe that we are conceived sinners, you know. We don't become a sinner because we sin, but we were conceived in sin. And therefore, I was a sinner on my way to hell. Somehow, by the grace of God, God chose me to be now talking to you here. But I was on my way to hell, and I came to this country very, very thankful, as I said earlier, but I wanted to get the money. I wanted to get the power. I wanted to get the sex, you know, power, sex, and money. You see, I had no barriers. I had no God. I didn't know Jesus. Yeah, I was Catholic, but what did that mean to me? You know, my mm-hmm. mother was a witch, but she was also a Catholic. You know, that's part of the Cuban culture in so mm-hmm. many ways. So, I mean, greed was part of my nature. You know, that's my condition. I'm a sinner. That's a superpower. So I became addicted to sex. Mm-hmm. I became mm-hmm. a sexual addict, not to the pornography on the computer, like many people do today, but to the real thing, because, hey, you know, I thought I was pretty good looking, you know, and I had the money. I was the number one salesman in the whole country for the company called Sun Life. I have my own company. I was the mayor's aide for the city of Union City. I mean, I sold insurance. I was the first Hispanic to put together Latin shows. I used to rent a boat like the Dolphin, 500 people, and other ones, you know, 1,200, and I took them from New York to the Bermudas, Miami to Nassau. I mean, I was a pretty good dancer, too. I was a womanizer, so I became addicted. So that's a very expensive addiction, just so you know.
And
the more money that I made, the more money I needed it, you know, so I didn't have any barriers. So somebody came to me with an easy deal, I thought, and I knew everybody. I was an influential person, I thought, and I went for it, and it took me to prison, you know.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, there's a story in the book, and that it took me a while to believe that it was really so, but that you're a former fugitive,
yep.
but you really got to travel overseas while you were on federal parole. How did that happen?
Well, I believe that you are referring to when I went to Wheaton College.
Yes.
Right. Well, I mean, that's another impossible thing that God did. Here I was facing 55 years, running from the FBI. Jesus captures me. He actually arrests me when I am hiding from the FBI in Venezuela. I come back to face the music. I'm supposed to get the entire thing. I get 3 years, that's God's mercy. I was released early to go to Wheaton College on the Chuck Colson Scholarship. I am on parole, and I'm allowed to travel to Israel. I mean, that's crazy. So I've
that is crazy.
So many crazy stuff, because I mean, how they would even let me go when I was a former FBI fugitive? Well, they did, not only out of state, but out of the country. And I went to five of them, you see.
Huh.
And here I meet my wife-to-be. She's my wife, Barbara, now, for almost 24 mm-hmm. years. And we meet on the last day of my parole at 10:30 at night. I didn't want to meet her. But God's grace drove me to it, because God's grace is irresistible, and I want everybody to know that. And here I am on the last day of my federal parole, meeting my future agent, or my wife, I say, you know,
mm-hmm.
that was going to keep me in line for all these years. And here we are meeting there in Jerusalem, I mean, on Mount Zion of all places, you know.
Mm. Right.
So God is amazing. That's a romantic story just by itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In the last minute that we have together, Manny, tell me, tell our listeners where they can find the book, where they can find more about you. The story is just overwhelmingly compelling. How can our listeners get their hands on it?
Thank you. They can go to our blog. We have a wonderful blog. They can go to www.mannymell, that's M-A-N-N-Y, mell, M-I-L-L, .com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a link there to Moody Publishers, and they can get it through that or through Amazon or through their bookstore
sure.
or whatever. And they can follow us on the blog. They can go to the Facebook, to Twitter, everything that they want.
Right.
You know, website too.
Excellent. Manny, thanks so much for being on the show. The story is overwhelming. I loved it. And the best to you. Thanks so much, Manny.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, God bless you. That's just amazing. I love stories like this.
You know, I think what is amazing is that God had his eye on us from the moment we're conceived to the moment we're in the Book of Life, and that he
yeah.
watched all those stages, the Cuban
yep.
stage, the successful stage, and
yeah.
chose to redeem.
Well, Absolutely. We're going to talk more about it after the break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. Join us here in just a minute.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger, on this great Saturday morning. It's a fabulous Saturday morning. I want to remind folks that next week we are moving to a new time, and it's going to be 10 o'clock on the East Coast, 7 o'clock on the West Coast. So you're used to this East Coast audience is used to us at 8 o'clock. The West Coast, for whoever's awake, is used to us at 5 o'clock. And that is going to change. Next week, it's Real Life with Beth and Rob. We're going to relaunch the show at our new and improved time. That's pretty exciting.
It is very exciting. I kind of tired, but feel like you're mocking me with your enthusiasm because you always make fun of how excited I get. But I like that. If you're being as genuine as it maybe, hopefully, you're being, you're exactly right. I think it's going to be fantastic to be on a new time.
Are you suggesting that I'm anything but genuine?
I mean, just saying. So,
I'm genuinely excited. I mean, half the country, maybe more, has not really had access to our show because
except
it starts at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. They've had access to our show on iTunes or on BethGuckenberger.com.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in that time, even with half of the United States perhaps not listening to us live, we've had 700,000 people download the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited. Somebody must like what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so to open that up to an entire new population, segment of people out on the West Coast and in Mountain Time and Central Time and all the rest, your friends in Monterey and maybe in Mazatlan, you know, if they've got XM and all that kind of stuff, they're going to listen to the show now. It's awesome.
All the way around the world.
And Real Life with Beth and Rob is the new name of the show. And we're going to have a new web presence, reallifewithbethandrob.com. And people are going to be able to interact with us a little bit. And they can, maybe they don't want to, but maybe they'll be on like, I wish you guys would stop talking so much or something. I don't know. But they'll get to tell us whatever they think.
Well, we could have, for example, if the web presence was up and running this week, put links to some of Manny Mills' material and his book.
I think
there's a lot more to his story than we were able to hear on the show today. But let's just continue to drive people to those resources so that they can keep the conversation going. Or if they're trying to repeat something to someone later on in the day, they're like, I think they said this, they can go back and get the information from there.
Oh, man. We got barely the tip of the iceberg with Manny Mill. His story is just, you read it, you read a couple pages, you go, that can't be true. Amazing. It's an inspiring, compelling story. And some of the background, you know, a current issue, a current issue is sort of the United States-Cuban relations, the Fidel Castro is not really running the show anymore, and what should we do? And so Manny, having grown up in Cuba, been back in 2010 as a believer, he has some real insight into sort of that idea of what's going on in Cuba, which personally I find rather interesting.
Yeah, and he became a believer through Prison Fellowship Ministry, which, you know, it was founded by Chet Colson, and just have the utmost respect for that organization and for what they're doing. And for, I mean, it just must be really fun to be on staff with them and to watch redemptive story after redemptive story. Just not one, you know, Saul to Paul, but just thousands and thousands of people who think there is nothing left to live for, and then Christ comes down and touches their heart. So anyway, we love Prison Fellowship and what they're doing.
Right. MannyMill.com, MannyMill.com. You can see what he's doing there on his blog and those things. You can see the book there, buy the book there, or you can get it at Amazon or perhaps FamilyChristian.com or any of those kind of places. So just a compelling story. When I was listening to him talk sort of about his run-in with the law and, you know, in Venezuela and Spain and all those kind of things, I couldn't help but think of some of the headlines that I've been reading about Mexico and what seems to be sort of just a crazy, just even a couple of weeks ago I read about a shootout in Reynosa and and just all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But you've been sort of talking a little bit. We're going to have a conversation on the air that we haven't had before, usually we have conversations and they spill over to the radio show. This time we're going to have a conversation that our listeners are going to hear us have for the first time. But you've been poking around about what's been going on in Monterey with the police department and the chief of police and some other things that seem to breed some hope.
But yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, anybody who lives in Mexico can feel the changes. 2 years ago in 2011, there were 1,782 deaths. Yep, in my state alone, related to drug cartel and what they say in the media or in any kind of government outlet as TCOs or transcriminal organizations. It was just the peak of violence, and that was an almost 90% increase from what our city had experienced in the past decade. Just a genuine spike, and those spikes happen because warring TCOs, you know, are out to take out each other's competition, and then there's drug and law enforcement that are right there in the middle of that. And during the height of that, we were losing about 26 officers a month. They were giving their life to the war.
And from what I would see, obviously, you have a completely different perspective. You live in Mexico, but what I can see from the United States, and I have a particular interest, obviously, because you guys live there. We have lots of friends who live in Mexico, whether it's in Monterrey or Cancun or Mazatlan, working with back-to-back. So we have a personal interest in what's going on, but even a casual interest in what's going on, it just seems to be like it's chaos. But that, number one, that's not been the case because I've traveled there. So it's not just like all-out chaos and it's unsafe everywhere you go. But this idea that the police are somehow, how they're involved, and some of them are not on the good side of this, and some are not, and it just seems like this chaotic, violent situation.
Yeah, I mean, I could say that in 2011, there was not a single Mexican resident or citizen that wasn't aware of what was happening, but it didn't curtail my activities in that time frame. I still, you know, my kids still played sports in the city, and we still went out to the movies at night, and, you know, life kind of went on as usual, but there was always this kind of underlying tension between what you knew was happening and what you were experiencing. And it was during that season that God gave this dream to a pastor friend of ours. He's not my pastor, but he's the pastor of several of our staff members. And we woke up one morning with what he knew was a prophetic dream. And in this dream, there was an image of him standing in a patio he'd never been in before. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of police officers that were on their knees in a prayer posture, and he had his hands extended over them. And when he woke up, he told his wife about it. And she said, well, did we even know a police officer? And he said, no,
yeah.
I don't even know a police officer. And she said, okay, well, we'll pray about maybe we can get to know some. Later that week,
Now, hold on. You're just running through. They don't know any police officers.
And
he has a dream. And you're just like, well, she said, maybe we'll get to know some. I mean,
yes, you know sometimes when you wake up that a dream was more than what it seemed, that it had a nature to it that was spiritual or supernatural. So later that week he was eating at a restaurant, and he saw a table full of officers who were eating lunch, and he thought maybe a first step towards friendship with them would be to pick up their tab. So he signaled to the waitress, I'd like to pick up the tab of those officers over there. And a few minutes later, once that message got communicated to the table, they came barreling over with their guns, you know, bared, because they thought he was trying to buy them in some way.
Oh, man.
Bribe them. And so he left that lunch date thinking to himself, okay, this is maybe not going to be as easy as I thought it was.
Yeah, he was just trying to be kind.
Then a few weeks later, so this is still in the fall of 2011, he had a church service, and he recognized some new faces in the congregation. So he said at the end of the service, anybody that's new wants to come forward for prayer, I'd love to pray over you. It's pretty common in Latin American churches to have a ministry time at the end, so that wasn't that unusual. So about 20 people came forward, all new to the congregation, and he went down the line, just prayed over their heads. And when he got to one of the heads, he felt the Lord place a message on his heart, and so he opened up his mouth and said it. And he said, I know that the Lord has spared your life two times, and he's brought you to Monterrey for the season you're in right now. And then he just kept going down the row. And he got towards the end of the line, and one of his leadership team came up and whispered in his ear, keep the service going, because the building is surrounded by officers, and I think something's going down outside, and I don't want people to be afraid, so, like, sing another song. And a few minutes later, that leadership team member came back and said, oh, never mind, the new chief of police is in the congregation, and it's his security detail outside.
Ooh.
The plot.
All right, man, and it's as if we planned it and we didn't. We got to go to a break, and so, like, man, this is going to be a good story. And as I told Elizabeth, I haven't heard this story before. So so you're going to have to come back like me and hear the end of the story. So, you know, I'm guessing that somehow or another the chief of police of Monterrey is somehow involved in this story. Am I right about that?
You are right.
Oh, my gosh. So anyway, join us after the break, and we're going to continue this conversation. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. And I want to remind our listeners that it's next week that we will be moving to 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. So we're looking forward to you joining us then. But today, I want to hear the end of this story about what's going on in Monterrey with the police department and the Lord and the chief of police and all that kind of stuff. So Join us right after the break. Again, this is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll see you in just a minute.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger, and we are genuinely thrilled. Beth was making fun of me in the last segment that I'm not genuine. I'm genuinely excited that you're spending our Saturday morning, or your Saturday morning, with us on Real Life, Real Talk. A reminder: we're a new time next week, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. Real Life with Beth and Rob. RealLifeWithBethAndRob.com. So we could not be more excited about what has been a whirlwind of a first year on the radio, which seems to just be growing. So that's pretty exciting.
We're excited about getting to see and talk to more of you in a time slot when we think that you got your radio on more often. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. And if you're compelled by this show or any of the shows you've heard, you can go to BethKuchenberger.com or iTunes under Real Life Real Talk, and you can download the show. But I got to get back to the story. We left your story about what's going on in Monterrey, Mexico these days with the chief of Monterrey's police department in a church with a guy who had a dream about somehow connecting with the Monterrey Police Department. So I'm on the edge of my seat, literally.
So Monterrey, you know, roughly the census puts it somewhere between 6 and 8 million. It's hard to give a complete census to a third world city, but that's about where they assume. And there's lots of kind of major subdivisions that surround the city proper. So this guy that was at the church service of my friend, he was actually the chief of police of a small subdivision where they estimate there's about 2 million people in it, called Guadalupe. So he just came there. The former chief of police of Guadalupe had, of course, been killed in the cartel violence, and he had just come from Cancun. So he was new to this church. He and the pastor met later that week, and the pastor shared with him his dream, and he said, well, I can't picture any scenario with any officers I've met ever on their knees in prayer, but why don't you come this week on a Saturday morning at 6:30? It's when we change our shift from the night shift to the day shift, and the men stand up at roll call, and I'll give you 5 minutes, the floor, if you want to just share a little bit about your faith in the Lord. And so the pastor went that first Saturday morning in the fall of 2011, and for 5 minutes at the 6 a.m. roll call, he shared the gospel. Nobody moved, blinked, responded, said anything. But when he walked around from the front of the station to the back where the men were standing already at attention, he immediately recognized the patio from his prophetic dream. And he knew, even if I can't see right now what's going to happen, right here is where it's going to go down.
All right. So slow me down. You know, you've told you this is the first time we've talked about this, right? We haven't talked about it off the air or anything like that, so I'm just going to interject. So this is the guy. He was the guy who prayed over this other guy, and at the roll call was the patio that he saw in his dream.
Yes. So he went every Saturday for 3 months at the 6:30 a.m. roll call time. And for 3 straight months, the men stood at attention all 5 minutes. He talked about integrity. They were God's justice agents on earth, all kinds of things. Nobody even thanked him at the end of his time. 3 months into it, he felt like the Lord told him he was supposed to bring praise and worship. And he said to the Lord, like, these people do not know how to sing any of these songs. But he brought a guitar at the three-month mark, and they would sing two praise songs, which these men didn't know the words to any of the songs, but they never even really had sung in unison of any version. So that was a kind of a strange experience. But then one Saturday, several months after he began with the praise and worship, one of the sergeants on a Saturday morning during the second praise song became what's called slain in the spirit, or he fell down in a sleep state because of how deeply he had been worshiping in his heart. And all the rest of the officers, they're trained as first responders. So as soon as this
he had a heart attack or something.
They went flying over to him. And the pastor stopped them and said, even though we couldn't see he was worshiping, this is what has been happening. And he got very encouraged by that. Meanwhile,
I bet he did.
The officers are losing 25, 26 of them a month, their lives in the line of duty. And so the morale was really down. And in February of 2012, about a year ago, this chief of police of Guadalupe said to this pastor, I want you to do a 30-day intensive course on leadership. Every day at roll call, not just on Saturdays, I want you to use David as your model, because these men, the ones that want to do things right, don't even know how to do it. They don't even have a good example. So February of 2012, this pastor came in every day at roll call and did a 15-minute class on leadership using the example of King David from the Bible. And at the end of that 30 days, the director of police announced what everyone knew, that during that 30-day period, not one officer life was lost. And so the officers didn't even realize what it was that was going on. They didn't know how to submit to the Lord still, and many of them hadn't surrendered their life at that point, but they knew they wanted that protection. So they said to the pastor, we want you to come every day. Come every day, whatever you want to say, come every day. We want more of that. And at that point, if you ask him, he'll tell you that it was when he realized, I can't come every day, I got a whole other job, and this is more than I bargained for. And he began to invite other pastors in the community into this storyline, that he said to me in his words, this is the day that the anointing went boom, when he began to involve the larger faith community. And he said to them, I don't want you to invite these people to your church. I want you to know that you are coming to church. When these men are gathered, they're at church. This is not in the name of anybody other than Jesus Christ. And so that went on all through the summer, and they began to see incredible victory. Like, the president of Mexico had brought in, of course, military force to help us with the drug cartel violence, but it was these officers from Guadalupe that were seeing incredible victory, and they knew they were seeing victory. So anyway, the fall happens, 2012, like 6 months ago. We had a new mayor of Guadalupe, and he met with the pastor and said, I just put my big toe in this river, but it is flowing hard, and I don't even understand what it is that's going on, but something is changing. Crime is ridiculously down in this community. People are out at night. People are helping each other. They're serving meals for each other. It's like something's happening, and I want to give credit every year at the end of the year. I give the keys of the city to somebody. Who is it that I should credit with what's happening in our town? And the pastor said, well, Jesus Christ. So if you go on YouTube and you write in Spanish, entrego los llaves de la ciudad, who giving the keys of this city. In the fall of 2012, the mayor of Guadalupe gave the keys of the city to Jesus Christ. And the day that you can't make that up. The day that
you can't make that up.
Jesus Christ, the city went crazy. You can see in the video. And then in the front row of
Celebratory or crazy what are you doing?
He announces, Cesar Garza, the mayor of this city, give the keys of this city into the hands of our Lord Jesus Christ. And the people cheered. So
and Guadalupe, Guadalupe is, like you said, it's a big city.
Big
How many?
City. It's 2 million people. It's
2 million people.
To the heart of our city proper. So then, okay, can I keep going? So then the front row, we're sitting the mayors of all the other major subdivisions in our city that represented the other communities. And as soon as they saw what was happening, they were like, well, my ceremony's next week. I want to give my keys to Jesus Christ, and I want to give my keys to Jesus Christ. And by the end of 2012, most of the major municipalities around the city proper had given their keys to Jesus Christ and had been asking local pastors to come in at the 6:30 a.m. roll shift in their police departments to share the gospel. Well, then you go into January of this year, and at this point in January of 2013, the government officials are like, could you go into the local prison? So today in our major prisons in the city, I mean, we have several of them, and they're large.
Right.
Every morning the wardens start out with a pastor giving a word of blessing over the and in the women's prison, those meetings are about 20 minutes long. They're giving genuine teachings of the gospel in these prisons. Now in the local schools, many of the public schools start with a local pastor coming in and doing a prayer at the flagpole. In our police academies, in the military fortress, they're opening the door to the faith of the church of the city. city to come in. Crime is down almost 80% as compared to where it was in 2011. And the last little thing to fall was the main city, Monterey proper.
Right.
On February 1st of 2013, the chief of police of Monterey asked the pastor to come in on Saturday morning at 6:30 and do a five-minute message at roll call. And I asked him just last week, how's it going in Monterey? And he said, well, I walked in the first day and there were 1,400 men standing at attention at the roll call. And at the end of my five-minute talk, they didn't even blink or move. But I absolutely know what's coming. And so we can see in
wow.
the city that redemption happens in all kinds of settings. I mean, it's happening in the individual life. It's happening in the lives of the families of those officers. It's happening in the lives of those pastors who are working together, not taking credit for themselves, but submitting themselves to a movement that's bigger than them. It's happening in our whole city. The atmosphere in the city is different than it was 2 years ago. And I love what Manny Mills talked about. I love what God's doing in Monterey. I love this idea that God redoes, remakes, rebuilds, restores, rescues, repairs things that are broken. No matter how far gone they seem, he still does it.
Amazing. And again, you know, having a perspective from the States and having read articles about Guadalupe, mm-hmm. right? My image of Guadalupe and the surrounding areas, the some of the places that we've even been when I've been in Monterey, right? My image of that is that it's just a crazy place.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear sort of the inside story, a story that won't be played on CNN or Fox News or any of the places here, that there is a redemption story going on, that, and I got to say, the way that it has been, that God is the only person who could fix that.
Literally.
Yeah, I mean, there was no fixing it. There was no political strategy. There was no government strategy. There was no military strategy that was going to fix that. And so to hear that, you know, crime is down, that 80% in the city, that these things are happening, man, it's crazy.
It's crazy, and it starts with obedience. It starts with listening. It starts with going month after month to something that God's asked you to do and seeing no fruit for your work, but still believing that God's asked you to do it and need to be obedient in it. In January of this year, we have like a USA Today type paper here in Mexico.
Yeah.
That goes over the whole nation, and the front page was a big picture of the Monterey police station with their hands raised in praise and worship. And it was like the shot heard around the country. Everybody is like, what is happening in that city? And the answer is Jesus.
Yeah, and that is, it's just amazing. And I chuckled because I thought how this story started. There was a guy who had a dream and to meet some policemen, and his wife said, well, I guess, or that something was going to happen in the police department. His wife said, well, I guess we got to meet some policemen. I mean, one guy has a dream, is obedient, kind of says, well, I guess he gives what looks like a bribe to a couple of policemen at a diner, and in less than 2 years, it sounds like, or 2 years' time, the city of Monterey and the surrounding municipalities are on fire for Jesus. That is just a crazy story.
It's crazy and absolutely true, and I think is a fantastic example
Amazing.
For us of what happens when we work together as a body.
Well, great stories. If that's not a conversation to inspire your day that you want to talk about and learn about after the show is over, I don't know what's going to get you to do that. But we're excited. Next week we're going to be back, but we're going to be back at a new time, 10 o'clock East Coast, 7 o'clock Pacific. We're going to be back with a web presence, Real Life with BethAndRob.com, where after the show, we're going to continue this conversation, and perhaps you can join us in it as well. So we are excited about the relaunch. We're excited that you pressured us to do it, those listeners out there. Beth, have a great Saturday.
You too. You have a great Saturday.
All right. This is Real Life with Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. Until next week, have a great Saturday.